Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. The news coming out of Texas is daunting, shocking. The headline is now 12 dead, 31 wounded at shootings at Fort Hood there in Texas. And according to the latest news reports, you're looking at 12 dead, 31 wounded, one shooter killed, two others taken into custody. I'm going to be honest with you. We had something we were going to discuss today. We're going to postpone for a later discussion because I think we really need to look at this and ask a question. Right now across America, there are an awful lot of people who are hearing this news. It's filtering out. It's beginning to lead. The President of the United States is making a statement about it. It's one of those news stories that comes out of the blue. It has the ring of the familiar. The tragedy is that there have been shootings, massacres. There have been attacks like this before. There have been tragic events that have dotted the headlines here and around the world. But right now, as this news is filtering out, there are persons who are having to ask and answer some very real questions. One clear question comes first and foremost to our minds when you see a headline like this. How is it that a human being could do such a thing? We're talking here about the mystery of the human heart. We're talking here about the reason why people do horrifying, unimaginable, murderous, really sinful things. There are children right now who are inevitably hearing and seeing this news report, and they're asking their parents, why would someone do this? How does something like this happen? You know, we talked on the program earlier this week about the hate crimes legislation that was signed into law by President Barack Obama. I have criticized that legislation and will continue to do so. I've criticized the president's statements made as he signed that legislation. But even as the president said something else in the course of that signing occasion, I affirmed that he used eloquent language speaking of two murderous attacks and saying, it's hard for us to imagine what was in the minds of those who did such a thing. I went on, and at my website at albertmohler.com, I posted an article in which I said, I think it's not only hard to imagine, it's almost impossible to imagine, but we still have to try to think about it and talk about it. We still have to answer the question that our children and others ask, why? And if we're really honest with ourselves, we really do struggle to understand how it is that anyone could do such a thing. We had the school shootings, the Columbine massacre. We had 9/11. We've had so many of these events that have come in a series, one after another, and we track it back. And you ask, when did it begin? And we as Christians know exactly where it began. It began in a garden called Eden, and it began, as we read in the Bible, a record in Genesis chapter 3. It began with the origin of human rebellion and human sin, and human evil works its way out institutionally and individually such that, well, let's be really honest. We not only do not understand what is going on in a human heart that could lead to at least now 12 dead and 31 wounded at Fort Hood, Texas, we're not really sure how we can explain what we see when we look in the mirror. We're talking about how we think about, talk about, explain, and try to reflect upon these events and others similar to them, and how we as Christians distinctively should think about these things. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Let's get to the bottom line issue for us. How is it that we should think differently as Christians than others looking at this headline? How is it that we should answer these pressing questions differently? Because we're informed by the scripture. Because we know the Christian gospel. How is it that our instincts, intuitions, our answers, our intellect, should be differently guided because we know what others do not know? You know, sometimes one of the real problems for Christians is that when presented with a challenge like this, we fail to connect the dots. And sometimes we'll even give answers that are largely right or somewhat right without even thinking about why we know they are right. There's certain things we have to know, certain things we have to say, certain things we know we believe in the light of something like this. And with a heaviness of heart, knowing that there is untold grief going on in many parts of the country right now, there is a sense of alarm and perhaps even a sense of panic, not to mention crushing grief that is affecting the lives of many in our country right now. This is the time right now for us to postpone what we were going to talk about today and talk about this. How do we, as Christians, answer this question differently? The question is why. Let's think about it today on the Albert Mueller Program. This is the place for intelligent Christian conversation. Give me a call at 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. We're always glad to hear from you by email. Write us at mail@albertmueller.com. Follow us and respond at Twitter. That's Twitter / Albert Mueller and Mueller Radio, and at Facebook, the Albert Mueller Program. We'll get to that discussion in just a moment. A review of other issues in the news takes us to Seattle, Washington, where it now appears that Referendum 71, that's the referendum called the Everything But Marriage Amendment there, or the referendum there, that would give domestic partnerships virtually all of the rights accorded to marriage. In fact, it gives everything but the name. Therefore, the reference to this referendum as the Anything But Marriage referendum, it now looks like it has passed with 51.65% of the votes and 48.35% opposed. And what really seems to be of interest in this is that across the country in Maine, there the voters of that state, a state known for its independence of mind and respect for individual lives, it came back to say, we know what marriage is. Individualism doesn't mean that every individual gets to define marriage. And they came back and by a margin of 53-47 conclusively rejected an action taken by their own legislature and governor to approve same-sex marriage. So you say, okay, there's Maine and here is Washington, two states that in terms of this kind of issue are likely to be more similar than dissimilar. What does it mean? Well, it means clearly this battle's going to go forward. But it also means, just as a bottom line, I mean, one thing that's just beyond any kind of refutation, that it's in all likelihood very crucial that in Washington they did avoid the word marriage. Now, as a Christian theologian, I have to tell you that avoiding the word is not enough. But it does tell you that there's a moral instinct. I think it's beyond doubt now that we can see that there's a moral instinct on the part of most Americans that the word marriage means one thing. But on the other hand, as they're thinking through the issues, clearly, at least when it comes to the voters in Washington state, they're ready to say to domestic partnerships, you can have everything but the word marriage. Meanwhile, in Washington, D.C., the House Democratic leaders are struggling to deal with the abortion issue. And you'll notice that I said that very carefully. I didn't say the House of Representatives is struggling on the abortion issue with the health care proposal. I said that the House Democratic leaders are struggling, which is to say that the pro-life impetus right now in the United States House of Representatives when it comes to determining the final form of the health reform legislation that will get to the floor of the House and eventually be negotiated with the Senate, the final form of this when it comes to issues related to abortion is really going to be determined by one party. And what we now know is that there are about 40 ardent pro-life Democrats who are simply refusing to go along with what the House Democratic leadership has wanted in this health care proposal. We now know that about 40 House Democrats, defined by the New York Times as a potentially decisive block, have threatened to oppose the bill without tighter restrictions on abortion. And it'll be very interesting to see how this comes about. One particular Democratic representative, that's Representative Brad Ellsworth of Indiana, is ardently determined to see that this bill will prohibit the use of federal money to provide abortions in the public insurance plan. And it'll be interesting to see how this goes about and ends up. But right now it does appear that even as Republicans have largely been shut out of this conversation, at least thanks to these 40 Democrats, it's a conversation that does continue. And I just want to remind you, it's in a conversation that must continue because it is vitally important. Just to tell you how determined the other side is, Representative Diana DeJet, a Democrat of Colorado, who is the leader of the Congressional Pro-Choice Caucus, it's very clear that they're opposing what Representative Ellsworth and others are trying to do because they want abortion in this health care reform. They want government tax monies going for the coverage of abortion. And the very fact that they want it Well, it tells you that they think it's in there. If they like the bill the way it is now, then I'm not going to trust anyone who tells me that it's abortion neutral, not when those who are demanding that abortion be included within the coverage say they like it the way it is. It just comes back to what we've been saying all along in this debate over the health care proposals. If the bill does not explicitly, clearly, comprehensively, and consistently exclude abortion coverage, it will be in there, whether the word is used or not. We're going to come back to talk about how Christians should think about what's happening right now in Fort Hood, Texas, and beyond that, what goes on in the human heart. We'll be right back with the Albert Miller Program.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Moeller Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Welcome back to the Albert Moeller Program. The headline is coming out with boldness that catches our attention, and the word is tragedy. 12 dead, 31 wounded in shootings at Fort Hood in Texas. This is breaking news, and we're talking about it because right now, this is exactly what is very much on the hearts and minds of just about any American who's at all plugged in to either the major media or the social media, because this is one of those things that immediately leaps out at us and reminds us human beings do horrifying, terrible things. And in this case, the horror, the terror, was at least one soldier, potentially a conspiracy of three, entering Fort Hood, a military post in Texas, and killing 12. And by the way, one of the killing 11, I guess, it looks like the shooter himself may have been the 12th of those killed. And with 31 wounded, there may be other deaths yet to follow. But many, many lives have been catastrophically affected. And, of course, you're talking here about grief that is setting in. And yet far beyond Fort Hood, Texas, which I'm told is the largest military outpost in the world. Far beyond those lives that are immediately affected, the lives of these soldiers and their loved ones, there are questions that are really lurking and erupting in every single human heart, saying, how does this happen? How do we explain this? What's going on? There are children riding in the back seats of cars and minivans who are listening to the radio news and saying, Mom, Dad, why would anyone do something like that? It's a question that comes up repeatedly. It comes up on the small scale of crime, criminality, attack, and violence in a local community. It comes about the broad scale of terrorist attacks that garner the international headlines. But right now we're talking about an event that is indeed, by definition, headline news, a deadly mass shooting at Fort Hood, Texas. My question to you is this. How should Christians think about this? We're talking about something that gets right to the heart, very literally, of what it means to be human. The heart of the great moral question that hangs over humanity. Why is it the human beings, how is it the human beings can do such horrifying things? Columbine, 9/11. You just go down the list and you realize that there is a great evil that lurks in the human heart. Auschwitz. You just start to think about the annals of human history. We're talking here about the reality that human beings are capable of unspeakable evil. And the only thing worse than not, you know, really addressing this would be to do so glibly and to offer that we have nothing to say here than what you're going to hear in headline news. I'm absolutely confident that the Christian gospel, the biblical worldview, provides us with some very essential data to talk about this. Some crucial insights that we would not know if God had not revealed the truth about ourselves to us. And lest we think this is a problem that is limited to Fort Hood, Texas, let's remember there are moments when we do not even understand ourselves, much less the minds and hearts of others. The phone number to join this conversation is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. I invite you to join the conversation in the spirit of this kind of context. What if someone comes up to you? A child, a friend, a neighbor, a fellow university or college student, a young person in your youth group, or the conversation could be over dinner tonight in a nursing home or a seniors facility. The question is, how can someone do such a thing? How do we explain this? What brings this about? How is it that human beings can contemplate, plan, and then carry out such evil intentions? The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. I want to go back to some basics with you as we're waiting for the calls to be readied for air, and as we're reading what's coming in by Facebook and Twitter and social media and email. I want to go over some basics with you. Here are a couple of things we know. Number one, human evil does have an origin. It has an origin in the fall. It has an origin in what we read about in Genesis chapter 3, when Adam and Eve ate of the forbidden fruit. They ate of the tree, which was of the knowledge of good and evil. And before they rebelled and disobeyed, before they accomplished evil in order to know evil, that's literally what Genesis 3 is all about. They had to commit an evil act of disobedience in order even to know what evil was all about. Once that happened, then evil was written into the DNA of every single human being. In Adam, we all sinned, and because of Adam, we now all sin. And we understand that in a fallen world, we have to expect that human beings are going to do horrible things. We have to expect that our children will attempt to lie to us. We have to expect that people will embezzle and steal. We have to expect that persons will often not tell us the truth. We have to expect that there will be certain persons who will give themselves to lust and to adultery. That we have to expect that there will be a market for pornography. We have to understand that there will be people who will be arsonists and murderers and extortioners and backbiters and gossips. There are people who will be co-conspirators in this evil. There'll be people who will devise evil plans and others who may accomplish them. But we're the people who are not supposed to be surprised. Christians, knowing what the Bible reveals to us about the origin and the significance of human evil, we know the biblical word for it is sin. Those who are Christians who know this and are informed by the Bible about these things, we're the people who can't step back and say, we have no clue why he did that. We have no clue where this comes from. And just understand that every worldview has to give some account as to how human beings could do this. Let me just offer you some alternative accounts. What if someone comes along and says, whoever did this, it's not really their fault. It's because they were weaned too early or too late. It's because of their socioeconomic context. It's because of some kind of behavioral influence in their lives. It's because of their diet. You know, maybe they ate too many Twinkies. When you hear all these kinds of hypothetical rationales given, you know, as Christians, we need to be the people who are clear-headed and biblically minded and say, no, we know why this happened. And we know that it goes right back to Genesis 3, and we know that the responsibility for it goes right into the recesses of the human heart. And the reality is, human beings can do awful things. As the Bible reveals, the mystery of the human heart comes down to the fact that we just have to ask, along with the prophet, the sinful heart. Who can fathom it? Who can really come to terms with it? The phone number is 877-893-8255. In Farmington, New Mexico, Sean's on the line listening on KPCL. What are you thinking, Sean?
Well, I'm thinking about the question that's been asked of why, and the way I think is that, you know, every person has the capacity to do both good and evil. It's just which one is being fed more, which desire is fed more. If you have a desire to do good, then you're going to do good. But if you do want to do evil, then you're going to do evil.
Okay, Sean, I think a very legitimate point is made there. When you ask the question, how can someone do something like this? You realize that's against the background of the fact that, thankfully, most people would never do something like this. So why did this person commit this act and another not? Sean is suggesting, in a way that I think there's good biblical support, that there are those who give themselves to evil. Let's just use his word for it. They feed evil. When we come back, we're going to think about just how that works and look at the bigger picture as well. The phone number is 877-893-8255. This is the place for intelligent Christian conversation. Give me a call. We need to think on this together and really carefully. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Welcome back. The news continues to unfold. ABC News is reporting that the shooter, or at least the lead shooter at Fort Hood, in the tragedy that has now left 12 dead and 31 wounded, was Major Malik Nadal Hassan, a recent convert to Islam. That's going to make the story a lot more interesting, but it doesn't make the question we're asking any different at all. We're asking the question, how do Christians understand and give an account for why human beings would do such a thing? How can you explain evil in the human heart? There are a couple of things I want to point out. Number one, the Christian worldview calls evil what it is. You know, you have worldviews out there that deny the existence of evil, or that deny that evil really is evil. And that is something that the Christian gospel just does not allow us to do. The Bible very, very clearly identifies evil as real. It puts it in its place. In other words, evil will be defeated by Christ. It's not as if the entire cosmos is in danger of collapsing into evil. We know that God is accomplishing his purposes to bring glory to himself in this cosmos, and he does so through the victory that will be in Jesus Christ. But we know that between now and then, there is horrifying evil that we will see working directly out of human hearts. The Christian worldview dignifies the reality by affirming that evil really is what it appears to be. And that's very, very important. The Christian gospel and the problem of evil, well, that just reminds us that there is indeed a very real problem here. And that evil really is evil, and that it is evil to deny the depravity and the horror and the awfulness and just the sinfulness of evil. There's something else coming out of this. You realize at this moment right now, I don't care where you are, whether it's at a gas station putting gas in your car, or picking up the kids from the school, or heading to a business meeting, or if you're heading into a faculty meeting at one of the elite universities in America today, one of those universities where the whole idea of postmodernism and that worldview has really taken root, and where moral relativism is one of the intellectual toys they love to play with day by day by day. Let me tell you, I doubt that anyone with a straight face can walk into that faculty meeting and suggest that he's a moral relativist right now. Not on something like this. The Christian worldview absolutely tells us that evil is evil, not because we call it that, but because it is evil in the eyes of God. It is objectively and absolutely evil. Evil's not just to something that we tag on to something because we don't like it. That is moral relativism, because then we could just tag or untag at our will. No, there's something deeply evil here, and human beings, let's be thankful to this, have the moral instinct to know that's true. Join the conversation. Give me a call at 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Let's go to Kristen, listening on KTGW, calling from Farmington, New Mexico. Kristen, what are you thinking?
Well, I think that this has global ramifications. Our current reliance on diplomacy and negotiation shows our tendency towards faith in man's desire for good, and it completely denies man's propensity for evil.
Yeah, we're living in a day in which people really do want to believe that human beings are getting better and better. And you would think that history would, or parenthood for that matter, or a good look in the mirror would really make that virtually impossible. But human beings are very resilient creatures, and we like to think that. Back at the beginning of the 20th century, human beings, especially in Western Europe and in North America, but in Europe in particular, were highly committed to this worldview of historical progress. Things are getting better and better and better. Well, that really crashed and burned in two world wars. And, you know, all the utopian humanistic worldviews of the 70s and the 80s and the 90s, they pretty much crashed and burned on 9/11, at least in terms of the public attention to the fact that human beings really will do evil things, have that capacity, just as Kristen said. Let's go to Marquette, Nebraska. Marnie's listening on KMMJ. What are you thinking, Marnie?
Well, I was just listening to some of the callers, and I wanted to remind people not to rush to judgment on these people. I agree that what they did was terrible, and that I don't condone what they did, but, you know, there may be circumstances where they may not have been you know, been psychologically stressed beyond their breaking point.
Interesting. Thanks for the call, Marnie. Marnie throws something out there. And this is a fairly recent form of moral argument. And we're indebted to her for throwing this on the table. There are people who are going to say it's really not or isn't necessarily an individual's responsibility. You have diminished capacity arguments that are being made. Interesting. Let's think about that, too. We'll do so when we come back. Join the conversation by calling me at 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. You're listening to the Albert Mueller Program.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mueller Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. We're talking about the tragedy unfolding in Fort Hood, Texas, and we're asking the crucial question, which is, how is it that Christians should think about and talk about this, informed by the Bible, that would lead us to say different things and to think different thoughts than a person operating from a different worldview, just looking at these headlines and trying to give an account? What do we say when our children ask, why would someone do something like this? What do we say when someone comes up to us on the campus and says, did you see this? How do we think about this? Now, we've talked about several things on the program already. We've talked about the fact that the Christian worldview calls evil by its proper name. It does not allow any moral relativism. It makes very clear that human beings, because of human sin, on the other side of Genesis 3, we're capable of incredible evil. Evil lurks in every single human heart. One of the things we're going to get to in a moment is why it is that not more people do this. Why are we still shocked and surprised when people give themselves to something like this? The death toll now, I am told, is standing at 12 at Fort Hood, Texas, including 11 persons killed by the shooter. The 12th death is the shooter himself, 31 others wounded, and there could be other deaths as well. Now, before we went into the break, Marnie called saying we need to be very careful not to immediately pass judgment. And said that the person doing this might have been severely mentally affected, psychologically off, however you want to put it. An interesting word to have offered here. And by the way, anyone who watches the courts knows that diminished capacity defenses are becoming more and more common, or at least are contemplated. And that raises a fascinating moral and theological question. Just how responsible are we for what we do? And just as we went into the break, I talked about some of the kinds of arguments used, going from what was eaten or not eaten to socioeconomic factors and, of course, the psychological and psychiatric stuff that's brought into this. Let me just say that the Christian worldview really identifies responsibility with the person who does such a thing. In other words, diminished capacity doesn't take you too far in terms of the Christian worldview, in terms of moral responsibility. It's not an irrelevant factor. And to Marnie's point, we need to say it's not an irrelevant factor. But the Bible also makes something else very clear, and that is that even as we cannot get into someone else's heart, we really can't. We can't fully interrogate another heart. We can't fully understand what's going on in a human mind or a human heart. We do have to pass moral judgment upon deeds, upon actions. And it's a good time for us to be reminded of that as well. And, you know, the question of the psychological complex, that's not irrelevant. I mean, we're all thinking those thoughts, wondering those things. But in the bottom line, we really do not have the capacity to interrogate another human heart that well. And I'll tell you what's even more frightening beyond that, because I do know there are persons who do give themselves to evil, the point that was made earlier, who do suffer from psychological and psychiatric issues and problems and syndromes and all the rest that could have an effect. I'll tell you what's most frightening to me is the number of persons who do these things, who do them with cold-blooded intentionality. I'll never forget hearing the interview that Dr. James Dobson did with Ted Bundy, Theodore Bundy, really reminds us of just how calculating he was. With absolutely no claim of mental impairment or anything else, he just coldly, calmly, in a calculating fashion, set out exactly what he had done and why he had done it. Talking about a serial killer between 1973 and 1978 he committed these murders. And by the way, the total number of victims could be from 26 to over 100 in that case. So we're talking about someone on a scale of evil far beyond the human imagination, except for the fact we're informed by reality. Now, we're going to get to the calls in just a moment. I want to invite you to call. The number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Very quickly, because this is an urgent question, let's deal with the question. Why is it that there are not more of these? Why is it that most people do not do this? Is it because they were, to use the old Southern expression, raised right? Well, that's not irrelevant. But let me be clear that the most important issue from the Christian worldview we bring to this is that God himself restrains evil. And that's very, very important. God restrains evil. If our creator and sovereign God did not restrain evil among us, we would all kill each other. We would steal from each other. We would violate each other's personal property. We would tell each other nothing but lies. The human heart given over to evil is a thing almost impossibly horrible for us to imagine. But the Lord does restrain evil. He restrains evil by his providence. He restrains evil by the gift of law and government. He restrains evil by the instruction of the good. He restrains evil by the effective administration of parents and police officers. Let me tell you, one of the ways God restrains evil, flashing blue lights on the side of the highway. How does God restrain evil? The reality of the law with crime and punishment. How does God restrain evil? By putting within the human heart a conscience that, though affected by sin, still cries out that there is right and wrong, and in such a way that we speak of great horror about a person who is without conscience. So even as we're having this conversation, we know the Christian worldview calls evil by its proper name. It traces evil right back to Genesis 3 and sin. It points to the entire human race as those who are complicit in evil. But it makes very clear that there are those who give themselves over to evil, who celebrate evil, worship evil, idolize evil, sell themselves and their hearts to evil. Why is it that not all do this? Well, the first reason is because God restrains evil, and we better be thankful that he does. The phone number is 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. Let's go to Louisville, Kentucky. Tommy's listening on WFIA. What are you thinking, Tommy?
I think when you have to, you know, if you're asked this question, why do these tragedies and things like this happen, you know, there's going to be two groups of people that's going to ask it. One, believers, and two, non-believers. Well, believers are going to pretty much know. I mean, I'm talking about the born-again Christians. But if you're talking to non-believers, you know, you just can't say, well, you know, this is a fallen world ever since Adam and Eve. You know, we are a fallen world. And these are going to have, you're going to have to go much more in debt with a non-believer, and they're going to say, "What do you mean it's a fallen world?" You know, some of them might even ask, you know, what did Adam and Eve do? You know, and I think, you know, it's according to what groups of people that you're talking about. I think believers would just be discussing among themselves. I mean, because we know the reason. You know, it's a fallen world. Things is going to happen. It has happened. It's going to happen in the future.
Tommy, thanks for your call. I'm sorry, we're going right into a break, and let me tell you, I hope you're right. I really do hope you're right, that Christians are thinking Christianly about this. You speak about born-again believers. You're absolutely right. They should be thinking in ways that are biblical about this. I certainly hope you're right. Maybe this conversation will help. We'll be right back with more. This conversation has gone very quickly. We're going to try to get some callers in here at the end. In Orlando, Florida, Bill's on the line. Bill, what's on your mind?
Yeah, I just want to say real quick, we should not be surprised as Christians. It's only by the grace of God that we're saved. And thank you.
Absolutely. Great word as we're running out of time. Fundamentally important word, Bill. Thank you. Let's go to Colby, listening on WFIA, calling from Clarksville, Indiana. Go ahead, Colby.
Yes, I'd like to know Dr. Mueller's views on how God's sovereignty plays out in relation to him restraining evil.
That is a very, very important issue, and that's where we just know certain things are given to us in the Scripture very straightforwardly. Number one, God is absolutely sovereign. Nothing happens that is outside of his reign and his rule over the cosmos. Number two, we do know that he is not the author of evil. so that he does not, by his positive action, bring about what we see here, but rather he does hold human beings accountable for the evil that we perform. And even as God is not the author of evil, any biblical worldview that's going to be consistent is going to have to understand that God has a purpose, even in the midst of all of this, that he accomplishes for his glory. And this is where, Colby, we need to be very, very careful to avoid at least two big errors. Number one, we've got to avoid any kind of explanation that leaves God less than he is. And we need to understand that there's a temptation here among some people, and this is where process theologians and a lot of liberal theology simply say, well, God's not really sovereign. He's just doing the best he can under the circumstances. That's just not allowable. The Bible just does not present any kind of option of that kind. Instead, God is God. As Nebuchadnezzar said, no one can withstand his hand. The second thing we need to avoid is suggesting that somehow God is orchestrating or celebrating this evil. We come to know that one of the limitations of any theology, of any Christian reflection on this, is that we cannot interrogate God. But we do know this. He is bringing glory to himself through the salvation of a people through the blood of his Son. And in this fallen world, he is redeeming sinners. And around us, the Lord is showing us in events, well, in events from a two-year-old disobeying his parent to what's going on today in the tragedy in Fort Hood, Texas, the Lord is showing us what sin looks like in order that we would see not only what sin looks like in those human hearts, but in our own, and so that we would desperately turn to Christ as Savior. There is only one means of rescue. There is only one Savior, only one rescuer, only one way out of this. And that is the Lord Jesus Christ. He is, at the end of the day, the refutation of the power of evil. Back tomorrow for Intelligent Christian Conversation. I'll meet you then.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmoeller.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmoeller.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.